all of you know that Lag BaOmer is a joyous day, that in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer, where we have a lot of Avelos and a lot of mourning, but on the 33rd day of the HaOmer, we're allowed to make weddings, get haircuts. Some people stop the Avelos from the 33rd day onwards, which from that day onwards. Others only regard the 33rd day as an interruption in the Avelos, which then resumes. So I want to talk a little bit about what is the special simcha of the 33rd day of the HaOmer. Now we know that the reason why we have Avelos during Sfira was because the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died. And Chazal say they died because they did not show proper kavod to each other. And we know that on Lag BaOmer, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. According to some, they began dying again today. According to others, they stopped on Lag BaOmer and it did not continue. But if we examine it in a much more deeper way, what was so special about the 33rd day of the HaOmer that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying exactly on that day? And to understand this, we have to delve a little bit into some very, very basic Kabbalah, very, very basic, and that is, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu manifests his divine presence in the world through a number of different vehicles, a number of different vessels. There's only one Hashem, of course. There's only one HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But as Moshe Cordovero says, just like when you pour water in different colored glasses, you pour water in a red glass, so it looks like you have red water, and you pour water in a blue glass, and it looks as if you have blue water, but it's all the same water, so too there are different midos and different ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows his divine presence in the world, which are simply different colors and manifestations of an indivisible unity. And the seven primary ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exhibits himself in the world are called the seven spheros. Actually, there are 10 spheros, but the three are in the nature of divine intellect. Keser, Chochma, Bina. But we're referring not to the intellect, we're referring to the actual manifestation of behavior in the world. And those are called the seven spheros. Spheros means orbs or sapphires, as it were. And they are based on a pasuk in Divrei HaYamim, a pasuk in Chronicles, that we recite when we take out the Sefer Torah. L'cha Hashem, to you Hashem, is gedula, greatness, gevura, strength, tiferes, right? The tiferes is beauty, netzach is eternity, v'yahod is glory, to you is everything in the world. We will see what that refers to. And it ends, Lecha Hashem Hamamlacha, and to you Hashem is kingship. So in the language of Kabbalah, let me just list it first, then we'll try to explain it. In the language of Kabbalah, the seven lower spheros, are number one, Chesed, which is loving kindness. Number two is Gevura, which is inner strength. Again, I'll explain it, but I just want to enumerate them first. Number three is Tiferes, which is beauty. So far it's exactly corresponding. Well, you'll notice that in the Pasuk it says Gedula, greatness, but that is identified as the Midah of Chesed. So there's Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes. Netzach means either victory or eternity or endurance. Victory, eternity, endurance. Hod is translated in English as glory, although that's not a very descriptive term per se. And that again is exactly in the Pasuk, right? Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod is exactly in that Pasuk. The sixth Svira, which corresponds to the words Kichol Bashamayim Uva'aretz, everything in heaven and earth, is called Yesod, foundation. Again, I'll go back and go over what all these mean. And the seventh sphere, L'cha Hashem HaMamlacha, to you Hashem is Mamlacha, is the sphere called Malchus, God's kingship. These are considered to be seven different ways that Hashem manifests His Shekhinah in the world. Yeah.
Besides saying it on
Shabbos,
where's the pasuk itself from?
Divrei Hayamim. It's in Chronicles. It was the prayer of David HaMelech when he wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. By the way, the Maharal wanted to write 7 svarim to neged each of these sviras. Now we only have partial. What do we have from the Maharal? We have the Sefer Gevuros Hashem, God's Gevura, which is about Yitzias Mitzrayim. We have Tiferes Yisrael, which is about Matan Torah, as we will see. We have Netzach Yisrael, eternity, which is about Golos and Geula. So Maharal wrote many Sfarim, but in terms of the Sviros, he only managed to have 3 out of the 7. The Maharal writes in his Hakdamah that he was going to write a Sefer Gedula on Shabbos, which we don't have, and he would have written Hod and the other one. And the Maharal was, his Kavana was, to write a unique Sefer on each of these Sviros and picking a theme that would correspond with the essence of that Sphera. Now, to explain this a bit more further, if you take the basic 7, and these are called the lower 7 because there are really a total of 10 Sviros, but the first 3 are described, Kavyacho, as God's mental operations, meaning just like a human being. Before you do things, you think. So the first 3 is God's cogitation, God's meditation, God's thought processes. And the 7 are the behaviors that manifest itself. So really, in Olam Hazeh, we only deal with the lower 7. We really don't deal with the upper 3. The upper 3 is God's mind, Kavyacho. Again, whatever that means. But in the lower 7, which are called the 7 spheros, and of course you understand that 7 is a very significant number. 7 represents the totality of creation, because 6 days plus a Shabbos, right? 7 is, the natural world is defined by the number 7. Again, to digress, that's why Bris Mila is on the 8th day, because Jews have a relationship to God that's above the natural order. That's the 8th day, the day after. Okay, but the thing is this. The 7 spheros are divided into 2 categories. There is the primary 3 and the lower 4, meaning to say that the most important of the spheros are the first 3, and you'll see why. And they represent the different behaviors of Hashem and how they get balanced. Chesed, which of course is Mida number 1, is the attribute of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is focused on giving, on benevolence, on revelation, on bestowing goodness and compassion and light to the world. And that of course is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's most dominant characteristic, is the characteristic of Chesed. However, too much Chesed would destroy the universe and destroy the world. Imagine and this is true on many, many levels. It's true even on a human level, right? If you give your child everything your child wants, total chesed, the child gets spoiled, right? If the child has candy whenever they want, right? They won't be able to eat proper food, they will get hurt, etc. And on a human level, on the divine level, that's also true. Because in a world that is so filled with open divine light, we could no longer exist as autonomous separate beings. For one thing, we would lose our capacity of Bechira. If all of us saw Hashem, or saw the divine light of Hashem, with total clarity, we would lose the capacity to ever make a choice. And if goodness is good only because you had the Bechira to go the other way, then in a sense you can't live in a world of total chesed. Because total chesed would equal total revelation, total openness, total understanding. That's not shaykh. And not only that, but even on a physical level. In order for human beings to exist, God had to make room. The Zohar actually, the Ari writes, that God had to contract within himself, otherwise I couldn't be here. God had to shrink himself. Again, these are metaphors. We don't understand at all exactly what these mean. Well, I cannot give you a full explanation of this, but the concept is, if God is everywhere, how can I be here? How can I be here? Isn't Hashem here? Answer, Hashem voluntarily contracted himself to make room. But that shouldn't be understood in a simple physical way. What it basically means is, Hashem concealed his presence so I could have Bechira. Therefore, the counterbalancing force to the chesed impulse is gevura. Now, people often misinterpret gevura. Gevura, which means strength, people often interpret that as punishment. It's not punishment, really. Midas hadin, the attribute of justice, is the attribute of concealment, containment, where God holds back some of his light, so that we could live in a world of free will. That we don't see everything so perfectly that we wouldn't have the ability to choose anymore. Just like, you don't have Bechira to stick your hand in a fire because it's so obvious. So if you lived in a world where Hashem was so obvious, there would be no Bechira. But you see, if there wouldn't be Bechira, there wouldn't be goodness. Because goodness is when you choose. Goodness is not when you have to do it because it's so simple. So Chesed is that attribute of God which gives. And Gevura is that attribute of God which creates hester punim, withholding, concealment, containment. Now, the thing is that is why the Balei Tanya writes that the very word olam, world, comes from the shorish he'elam, concealment, containment. And that's why the word Elohim, that is normally the name of Hashem that we use for the Midas Hadin, the attribute of justice, has the same numerical equivalent, the same gematria, as the word Hateva, nature. Again, see, this is a new understanding. Midas Hadin is not so much that which punishes, but Midas Hadin is that in which God is not so visible. In other words, the world seems to be a world of nature, a world of predictability, a world of laws, a world of hester panim. See, hester panim is not only when bad things happen. Hester panim just means we don't have a sense of Hashem running the world, which of course he is running the world, but there's a certain amount of hester. That is the koach of gevura, and gevura is necessary for there to be bechira. Because without Bechira, there could not be goodness. Yeah.
So when somebody is saying to Hashem, take out the din from the world, this one thing, are you saying that Hashem should stop concealing himself?
That's right. That's exactly it. Because Golos is considered to be Hester Panim. God, now remember, it's not that God isn't there. God hides himself. You don't see Hashem. Of course, you know the famous mashal they say in Sefer Chassidus, the Hester Panim. It's a beautiful mashal. Hashem conceals his face. They tell the story about the child who was crying. And the Rebbe asked the child, why are you crying? And the child said, well, I'm playing hide and go seek and I'm hiding. So the Rebbe says, why are you crying? He says, because nobody's looking for me. So the Rebbe said, he now understands Hester Panim. The Eberster hides, but the Eberster wants us to look for him. So this is why Chesed needs to be counterbalanced by Gevura. Now again, keep in mind that this parallels human relationships in which the giving of a parent to a child needs to be counterbalanced with a certain structure and rule and certain boundaries and containment. I once heard from a child psychologist, I may have mentioned this before, but it's such a striking muscle that I always repeat it. She was describing to parents once, now you think that you're doing your children a favor when you let them do whatever they want to do. And she talked about the anxiety that a child has not being given any structure or guidance. And she compared it, imagine if you're on a 747 going to Israel or something, and the pilot comes to you in the middle of the trip and says, I want to take a nap a little bit, could you handle the plane just for half an hour? Imagine how he would feel having to, having to take over this plane, having no idea what to do, and the whole plane is up to you. When parents kind of communicate to a child, you know, you can make the decisions, at least on major issues. How scary that must be, how frightening that must be. You know, it's frightening for adults too, and for a child would even be more so. So the chesed needs to be counterbalanced with gevurah. Now, what happens is the following. What happens is, however, that when there's too much gevurah, there's complete hester panim and chorban and destruction, too much chesed, we lose our bechira. So the third midah, which is the apex of a triangle, is called Tiferes. Tiferes, beauty, is when chesed and gevurah are mixed in the right proportions so that there's not too much of one or too much of the other. And that's why it's called beauty, because what is beauty? Beauty is when even physical beauty, is when opposite forces are brought together in a perfect harmony. So the beauty of a painting is not that it's simple, you know, in modern art you can buy a painting that's just white or what, or black or something, but classical art involved the integration of different types of colors to create something beautiful. A symphony, different types of notes and different types of instruments. In fact, the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, the beauty of the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, is not when everybody is the same. That's why there are different shvatim, different tribes, different flags. But each person and each shevet is a unique and different color. And that creates the beauty, and it creates the beauty of unity. So people make a mistake when they say unity is conformity and sameness. Unity is a celebration of uniqueness and diversity. Now granted, I don't mean to say diversity in the sense of everybody doing their own thing, meaning, I keep Shabbos, you don't keep Shabbos, and that's fine, type of thing. I mean, that's a different issue. But united under the central core of Torah and mitzvahs, each person must be an individual. Each person must be unique. Each person must, as it were, try to find out that which is their different and distinguishing characteristic. And that's Tiferes, that's beauty. Because beauty is when the forces which are in opposite directions come together and create that shleimus, so you don't veer to a given extreme. Again, to use the human analogy, in parenting that's exactly it. The balance between chesed, giving your children, and gevurah, imposing restraint and containment and rules. And by the way, Chazal express it very, very beautifully. They say in every parent-child relationship, there must be chesed and there must be gevurah, right? There must be loving kindness and there must be discipline and restraint. You have to have a balance. It's a delicate balance. But there's a minor chazal that say, and this is really only for the righties in the room, for the lefties who just switch the hands, and they say that the yamin, the right hand, which is the strong, dominant hand, should be mekareves, should be the hand that draws near. Meaning you got to have both. But the dominant, overpowering emotion should be that of love and closeness. And then the small, the left hand, which is identified as the weaker hand, should be the one of discipline. So you have to have discipline. There's no question. Too much chesed is destructive. But the balance has to be more on the chesed side and less on the gevurah side.
If Hashem is perfect, so shouldn't there always be this balance of tiferes? It doesn't seem that it's that way. It depends on us.
Yes, that's exactly it. Hashem could have made the world any way he wanted to make the world. But among the decisions that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made is the hashpa, the influences that he brings into the world are connected to us. We decide. Now that explains, that's really one of the concepts of why is man in the image of God? Part of it is, we're godly. We create the world. Meaning to say, we, collectively, we define what this world is going to be like. Hashem responds to us. Rav Yisrael Salanter used to say, or the Baal Shem Tov, it's one of those Hasidic Masnagit things. We have the two opposite things. That Hashem Tzilcha, Hashem is your shadow, David HaMelech says. So Rabbi Shaul Salanter or the Baal Shem Tov used to interpret it, just like wherever you move, your shadow goes. Hashem tracks us. Right? So that's a tremendous power a human being has. So we say, therefore, that the Yamin should be Mekareves, and the Smol should be Doche. The left hand pushes aside. Right? Again, it's an important lesson that we have to keep in mind, because, how it applies in every case is again, a very, very difficult balance. But it generally suggests that the most important attribute in the relationship is the love and the care that you show for your child, needing to have structure and discipline and guidance as well, but that should be the left hand and the right hand should be the cure. But I've heard it said by, there's a film therapist in Toronto, she's written a number of books, Sarah Hannah Ratcliffe, maybe you've seen some of her books, Asia Connecta, she's written different stuff. So she suggests, I don't know if there's any particular marker for it, that a parent should try to have 75% of their communications per day be positive and no more than 25% negative. Now, and she suggests if you would follow yourself around with a tape recorder in the course of the day, you might see the ratio reversed, 75% negative and maybe 25% or less. Right? Now, it's not just a question of giving in. Basically, the concept is that the higher percentage of your remarks, which are going to be critical and corrective, there is actually you get a less of a rate of return on them. After a while, a person simply shuts them off. You stop listening. Or you get so demoralized that, you don't have the energy of the child to change or to improve or whatever. So you have to kind of be selective on it. Yeah, sorry, did you want to say?
No, I remember a few weeks ago, I was also talking about the Yamin Lekarevis thing, and he was saying like the opposite, and he said that the small is the stronger hand, and that's, and he was talking about, and you see it's the time, and that's why it was the second set of the Makos, which corresponded to the second hand, which really, did the Israel in, and he was saying it exactly.
So our coach broker is a lefty?
I think because he said small is the gavura or something.
I understand that. But my twist is exactly the opposite, meaning yes, it's very true.
So I said that
Yamin is chesed, small is gavura. But instead of translating that to mean, therefore the left is the powerful hand, it's the opposite. Hashem's mida of gavura is the less dominant mida. That's why it's the left. Yeah, I understand what he's saying.
I'll be that case in the movement, but he didn't seem to.
Now
it's very clear from the system. When they're saying this about, pushing mm-hmm. away with the one hand and the other.
I didn't hear the shir, and there are different mahalchim in this, but even if you look in Svarim, for example, if you look in Svarim, not just the modern things, look in Svarim about raising children, Lavolba's writings, for example, he clearly talks about, Bizman Hazeh at least, the great importance of Amidas HaChesed. Now, it could very well be that in different generations, where people are overall stronger, they could take different types of things, but at least today, we interpret this Maimer Chazal to refer primarily to the strength of the Yamin, that the Yamin is the stronger hand, and the stronger hand is defined as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attribute of Chesed. So, but however you strike the balance, Tiferes is a synthesis of the opposites of Chesed and Gevura to achieve harmony, beauty, unification, both in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to us and how we relate to each other. That's why Tiferes has a lot of different names. Tiferes is called beauty. Tiferes is called emes, truth. Because truth is when you have the balance. And Tiferes, interestingly enough, is also called rachamim. Now that's interesting. Because many people think, rachamim and chesed are the same. Not really. Chesed is pure giving. But pure giving could be destructive to a person. Rachamim, mercy, is when you properly combine the giving with the chesed. Now again, with the gevura. Now again, we use chesed interchangeably, so I'm not saying in daily speech we're so medayic, but in this vocabulary of Kabbalah, the concept would be this. If you're a poor person, chesed would mean I would just feed you and feed you and feed you and feed you the rest of your life. Rachamim would be, I would find a way for you to get a job, even if that means, you know, you're not going to get all the best meals all the time. And so you see, rachamim, true rachamim, is when it's combined with a sense of gevura, right? So in common speech, we do say chesed and rachamim are synonymous. But technically, according to Kabbalah, rachamim is the synthesis of chesed and gevura, and rachamim is equivalent to the midah of tiferes. And of course, it's no accident that the shorish of rachamim is rechem. Rechem means the womb, the relationship of a mother to a child. And once again, the remez is, true rachamim, true maternal relationship, is when you balance the chesed and gevura. And that's why it's no accident that when the Torah describes, it's a very peculiar expression, when the Torah describes incest, it uses the words by a sister. A brother should not be with a sister because it is chesed. So you read that passage, chesed, chesed's a good thing. Again, it's making the point that unbounded love, which has no limitation on it, can turn into the greatest avera. Right? What is it? What is incest? I'm not talking about rape. I'm saying voluntary incest. What is sugafella? I mean, the answer basically is that it's taking a very noble and beautiful emotion, the emotion of loving somebody, but without the constraint and the boundaries that the Torah puts in that relationship. So the Torah uses the word chesed. It's not rachamim, it's chesed. Because chesed taken to an extreme can actually be very, very destructive. Yeah.
Could one say that chesed is giving, and that giving is taking into account only themselves, essentially that I am doing a mitzvah, and the offering takes into consideration the person to whom the chesed is being given, other person to it.
Right, yeah, I think that's a very good point. That's certainly a very important mussar that we have to be aware of all the time. And that is, sometimes we do chesed because it benefits us psychologically and without taking into account the dignity and the needs and the autonomy of that individual. I think I mentioned before, the Chazon Ish gives, which is not true rachamim. True rachamim is when you take into account what that person needs. The Chazon Ish, I think I mentioned this before, the Chazon Ish gives a famous mashal in the Sefer Emunah U'Bitachon. He says, imagine that you like to have guests over for Shabbos. And you're so excited, you have no guests, and you see somebody in shul Friday nights or Shabbos morning, and you figure, oh, I can now get them. And you go over to them after davening, and the person says, I'm sorry, 5 minutes before Reuven so-and-so asked me over. And let's say Reuven is very hospitable and that's a good place to go. So the Chazon Ish says, are you going to feel bad or are you going to feel good? So the Chazon Ish says, it all depends on what your motivation is. If your motivation is you really wanted to help the person, you want the person to be comfortable and have a good place, then it shouldn't really make a big difference to you if it's you or somebody else. You should be happy. Baruch Hashem, you have a place, and I'm happy for you. If, however, the chesed is, we kind of get a certain ego trip, that, you know, we're hospitable, you know, we always have people for Shabbos type of thing, then you're going to feel cheated that somebody else kind of took it away from you. Now, that's not to say you shouldn't do it. I'm not saying that, you know, unless it's the total highest level, there's something wrong with it. But the Chazon Ish points out that we do have to be aware that sometimes we use people to give ourselves more mitzvahs. And that's kind of, you know, we use them to get points in Shemayim or to get recognition from others. You know, not, you know, again, not openly necessarily, but and the Chazon Ish says that's not true rachamim. True rachamim is when you're concerned for them, not concerned for you. And so that, again, that is a cheshvan to be aware of.
I don't think we can make that distinction, though, about chesed and rachamim, because if Avram was chesed, Avram certainly wasn't doing it just to himself. No, it's not exclusive, but the point is, though, that I think the point the Rambam is making is
that sometimes the reason why our chesed is not properly bounded is because we're not totally focused on the needs of that person. Like the example might be that if I want to get a reputation as a hospitable person, so I'll keep on, you know, housing somebody and supporting them without ever taking a step for them to become self-sufficient, because I want them to have a dependency on me. So I'm not saying that that was the case, that's the case in every case of chesed, but one of the factors in which we have a distortion of chesed is that we need to foster the dependency. And that's, you know, that's an important idea, that sometimes, in fact, it even works with parents and children sometimes in subtle and pernicious ways, in which we don't want our children to need us less, because we get something from the fact that they need us so much, right? That's, again, some degree, I mean, it's only a very small part, but to some degree, adolescent tensions arise from the child's need for independence versus the parent's desire that the child not be so independent. And sometimes we have to ask ourselves, is that because that's best for the child? Or is that because that's best for me, that the child still need me? In fact, it's very interesting that I once saw a survey, it wasn't a Jewish survey, when parents and grandparents were asked what was their favorite time of life with their children. Virtually everyone said when they were babies. It's a very, very funny thing. As hard as that is, getting up in the middle of the night, but then many people said, you know, they just needed me so much. I know that I made I know that I was important in their lives in ways that we sometimes don't always feel as life goes on, although it's always true, but we don't always feel that. Yeah.
I just wanted to give a personal example. It's very subtle, this idea of chesed and giving in a way that it really fulfills a mission. Sometimes you want to give, and then it puts the other person in a sense of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
How can they repay you?
That's right. That's right.
I just realized myself and something I was doing that fits there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's a very subtle kind of dynamic
that
we have to be aware of.
That's very true. I again, just to digress and just to talk about this just for a minute, because it's an interesting point. In a marriage, that's very true. You know, we talk about in a marriage that the main thing is that you should give to the other person. Give, right? That's the whole idea of the Torah says, Lo tov hayos ha'adam levado. It is not good for a person to be alone. So therefore, I'll give him a helpmate. So the Torah says, what's so bad to be alone? Adam HaRishon is in Gan Eden. He has everything he wants. What's so bad to be alone? So you know what the Torah says? The Torah says a beautiful thought. The Torah says, when Adam HaRishon is alone, he has whatever he wants to take, he can take. Infinite capacity to take. But he has no one to whom to give. And how can he be like Hashem, who only gives and doesn't take, if there's nobody to whom to give? So why did Hashem create an Ezer? Not to give Adam anything. Hashem created an Ezer to give Adam and Chava the ability to become godly by learning to become givers rather than takers. So marriage was created so that we should learn to go beyond our selfishness and be givers. That's the whole tachlis of marriage. However, here is the subtlety, exactly your point. Part of learning to be a giver is to open yourself up and be willing to take. And the reason is this. Sometimes the greatest gift you can give another person, and this is true even if you're not married yet, Mr. Shem should be in the next few years, but this is also in a relationship with friends. Sometimes the greatest gift you can give another person is to let them give you something. Because then you show to them, you're giving them a sense of cover that they have something to give you. And sometimes, when you create a relationship where you convince yourself that you're the only one that's giving, and you can convince yourself, oh, I'm such excited because I'm always giving, what you're really doing is you're taking away from the other person the most precious gift you can give them, and that is that they have something to give. So the subtlety here is that sometimes the way you give is by being open to take. You give by letting the other person give you. And that's not a selfish taking. That is a very selfless act to kind of show that you need the other person for something. And the truth is, I remember reading when I was in 7th or 8th grade, the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. You've heard of Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin writes, he was writing it not from a ruchniyistic standpoint, but just from a practical standpoint. When he came as a young man to Philadelphia, he wanted to get into the good graces of the wealthy people in the community. He wanted to kind of make connections. So he discussed, how do you make connections with somebody? You don't ask them for a big favor because they may resent it. You don't do a favor to them because then they'll feel bad, they'll feel beholden to you. You ask them for a small, easy favor that's very easy for them to do, and then they'll really like you. Why will they like you? Because on one hand, it wasn't a big deal, but they feel chashuv. They feel chashuv that they did something, right? So part of chesed is to make people feel chashuv. And you make them feel chashuv by asking them to do things for you sometimes, right? So the truth of the matter is, even in a marriage, it's sometimes nice for a husband or a wife to ask their spouse to do something. Again, on both sides, try not to be too excessive, but to ask. In other words, even if you can get up and do it yourself, so sometimes you can do, why don't I do it myself? But there's kind of an meaning of showing that you need them in some way. That's actually a way of expressing affection in many ways, asking someone to do something for you. But again, as Benjamin Franklin said, it shouldn't be too hard of a thing. It should be a relatively easy thing. So the point is that sometimes the greatest giving is allowing yourself to take. That's very true. Now these are the first three spheres: Chesed, Gevura. They're synthesized by Tiferes. Now, in the Kabbalistic conception of Torah and Mitzvos, we control the balance of how those forces come out. In ways that, you know, we really don't understand. Meaning, sometimes there's too much gevura in the world, right? And in fact, in this imagery, gevura is often portrayed by the color red. It's one of the reasons why they sometimes say women shouldn't wear red garments. Maybe that's why bulls get angry when they see red. Although I heard that that's not true. I actually heard that bulls are colorblind. And with the, it's only the movement, okay, but you know, the Velt says it's because bulls get mad when they see red. But, chesed is often by the color blue. That's why if you go to Tzfat, for example, which is the city of Kabbalah, you'll see all of the shuls are painted blue to get that chesed. And the mixture of Tiferes is the mixture of the blue and the red, and sometimes there's too much red, and sometimes there's too much blue. So like a painter, they do the mitzvahs, and Mekubal like knows, I got to do more of this mitzvah to get more of the blue. It's like a painter. It's almost a mechanical conception of things, where you do certain things to get this force and this force, right? It's broken down that much, and these are amazing things. For example...
So is it purple?
Well, it'll be a purple, but the question is, there's a purple that has more red. That's right. Now, here is the thing. If you look at a, I don't know if you've ever seen a Kabbalistic Siddur. I mean, it's not available in that many places. But every word of davening, you'll have 5 pages of specific things to think about. When they blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah, they blow tekiah. So tekiah has 5 pages. And then they blow shvarim. 3 toots, each toot has a different 5 pages. Teruah, each 9 toots, and each time it's done is different, right? Everything is so specific in ways that, you know, it's not even, I mean, forget about the fact that we wouldn't even understand, you know, one sentence of it. But even if you understood the stuff, how much can a person keep in their mind? I mean, let's say you were able to understand the ideas, but each one, you're blowing a, how fast can you think? You're blowing a trua nine times. Da, 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 da. So each one is a separate, you know, five-page thing. But this is what the process is. Very, very specific. The synthesis, the harmonization, the integration of chesed and gevura creates tiferes. Now, we also know that these three midos are mechuvan, are connected to what Pirkei Avos says, are the three principles on which the world stands, right? Pirkei Avos says, Al shlosha devarim ha'olam omeid. The world stands on three principles. Al ha-Torah, learning of Torah. Al ha-Avoda, divine service, which are korbanos and prayer. And on gemilas chasadim, and on loving kindness. Well, gemilas chasadim is connected to chesed. Avoda, which is discipline and introspection, containment, meditation. That is the midah of gevura in the human being. And Torah is connected to tiferes. Why? And that is why the Maharal Sefer on Matan Torah is called Tiferes Yisrael. Because what is Torah? Torah, above all, teaches us in our own lives to synthesize chesed and gevura. When do I give in? When do I hold back? Like, that is what halacha is. That is tiferes Yisrael. I think I may have mentioned a few weeks ago, that is why everything in the Maharal writes, that is why everything in Matan Torah is connected to the number three. In other words, the Torah was given in the third month, Nisan Yer Sivan. It was given the third day of separation. There are threefold Torah, Leviim, Kesuvim. It was given to a threefold nation, Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. The Maharal says, because three is the number of synthesis. You have opposites which meet at an apex. And Torah is the synthesis. Well, in many ways, it's a synthesis of Gashmius and Ruchnius, and it's also a synthesis of Chesed and Gevura. Okay? That's what the Maharal writes in Tiferes Yisrael. Now, it's also true, Rav Dessler writes, and again, many, many Svarim say this, that these three Sviros are also Mechuvan, connected the three of us. That Avraham Avinu primarily served Hashem through the attribute of chesed and loving kindness. Yitzchak served HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the attribute of inner strength and discipline and avoda. Of course, Yitzchak is connected avoda because Yitzchak was a korban. And Yaakov combined chesed and devorah and achieved tiferes. And that's why Yaakov spent 14 years learning Torah in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. And the Zohar writes that since Avraham was primarily chesed, there was a pesolas, there was a refuse, there was a bad thing that came out, which was Yishmael. And since Yitzchak was totally to the side of Gevura, there was the pesolas of Esav. It is only Yaakov Avinu that is the harmonization of chesed and gevura, which is the beauty of mitaso shleima. That means the bed was complete, meaning all of Yaakov Avinu's children. I mean, they had their tzoros, mechiras Yosef. I mean, they had problems. But in terms of being Am Yisrael, all of them were Am Yisrael. And that's why now people ask the question, well, are we saying, as it were, you know, Yaakov is better, is greater than Avraham? It's not really a question of greater, because the idea was Yaakov built on the yesodos, on the foundations that the Avos dug. Avraham dug the foundation of serving Hashem through chesed. And Yitzchak dug the foundation of gevurah. It was Yaakov who was able to stand on the shoulders of Avraham and Yitzchak to achieve this balance and harmony. And just like we say, of course this is not a correct description of Yaakov, but just like we say, a midget that stands on the shoulders of a giant can see further than the giant because they're standing on the shoulder of the giant. in a sense, I mean, Yaakov Avinu was no midget, chas v'shalom, but the point was that it's not a question of, oh, you know, Yaakov is greater. The issue is, Yaakov, I mean, the Avos built foundations, and each Av was mosif on what the predecessor did, and Yaakov was able to achieve that shlemus and that harmony. And that, of course, it's also very interesting why,
Emes, right?
And that's why it's Emes, and that's why Yaakov is the Midah of Emes, and Yaakov is the Midah of Torah. And that is why it says, if you look at the wives, that Avraham, who was Kulo Chesed, needed to be counterbalanced by Sarah, who understood the need for constraints. Remember, Avraham could not banish Ishmael until Sarah said so, because Sarah understood that this chesed towards Yishmael would have destroyed Yitzchak. And Hashem said, listen to Sarah. That's why Yitzchak, whose midah was Gevura, had to be counterbalanced by Rivka, whose outstanding characteristic was chesed. Again, Yaakov's wives are a bit complicated. Yaakov had four wives, etc., but that's because Yaakov himself represented a balance of all these things. This also tells us an important idea about marriage, and that is, what you look for in a spouse is someone who is not a clone of yourself, but someone that completes those chesronos that might exist within your own personality to bring out within you those aspects that would otherwise be lacking. So the gevura tendency needs a harmonization of a chesed tendency. And the chesed tendency needs... They're not as clear cut. And as I say, the basic idea is you're going to see that the latter four are simply amplifications of the first three. In other words, in a more narrower focus. Svira number four is Netzach. Netzach, as I say, is translated in different ways. Victory, eternity, endurance. Now, Netzach, we are going to see, is connected to chesed. Netzach is a reprise of chesed, but it's a chesed that is infused with a sense of gevura. And what it means is the following. Netzach is the chesed that God shows by giving us guidance, direction, and structure as an aspect of chesed. And that's why Netzach correlates to Moshe Rabbeinu. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He gave us rules, he gave us laws, he gave us guidance. That's a tremendous chesed. That's the chesed. Right? People often speak about this. Many Bali Tshuva say that, again, I mean, you can sometimes argue with the characterization, but they say the thing they love about being from is they know exactly what they have to do every morning. I see this in a lot of articles. Just, it's so good to know that I got to do this Saturday morning instead of, what do I do? Yeah? So that is a form of chesed, but it's a chesed that's correlated to gevura, as it were, because it's restraints. And therefore that fourth sphera is keneged Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the one that demonstrated that. Now, hod, glory, is a form of gevura, restraint, that's correlated to loving kindness. In other words, Netzach is a chesed that gets its source from gevura, and hod is a gevura that gets its source from chesed, and that is the gevura of stepping back and letting somebody shine, letting somebody be their own person. So Netzach is plying someone with instruction and guidance. Hod is stepping back. So the relationship of Netzach to Hod, to Chesed and Gevura, is a complex one. Netzach is the loving kindness you show by giving people structure. Hod is the inner strength and restraint you show by giving people autonomy and freedom. That corresponds with Aharon. Aharon was the one who stepped back and let people be who they were. Now, just like Chesed...
Say again?
How do you say that? Well, that's part of being an Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, is to let people have a sense that they were Chashev. And of course, the Chedo Egel. The Chedo Egel is an example of it being taken in a bad way
for who they are.
Now, just like Chesed and Gevura by themselves are destructive, Netzach and Hod have similar dysfunctions by themselves. Netzach is over-regimentation, which never allows you to be a free and thinking person, and you lose your ability to make decisions. Hod is you're left rudderless in life. And of course we know that in Aaron's own case, the destructive aspect of Hod was the Chedo Ego. In other words, they come to Aaron and they say, we want to make an ego? Aaron's response is, however we understand it, is let them do it. I'll let them figure it out how it's going to be. So the synthesis between Netzach and Hod, which is a parallel to the synthesis between Chesed and Gevura, is what is called Yesod, foundation. And that is exemplified by the life of Yosef. Why is Yosef a good example of the combination? Because Yosef spent the first 17 years of his life learning with Yaakov, getting guidance, getting instruction, getting Torah. But then he lived out 22 years of his life away from his family, away from a Jewish society, in Golos, in prison, in the Mishnah LeMelech. And Yosef's whole arena was an arena where he was all by himself, in which he had to take the responsibility for making those decisions. And therefore it is the balance between guidance and instruction and autonomy. Now you'll notice, therefore, that we're not following chronology, that the Sviras go with Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David. Well, David is the last one. I haven't gotten to David yet. But you'll notice that Yosef is number 6, not number 4. And that is the same order as the Ushpizim, the special guests that we have on Sukkot. Avram, right, first day of Sukkot, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. We'll get to David in a second. And the Ushpizin are connected to spheres. That's why you see some Sidurim change the order. They want to be chronological. They make the fourth day of Sukkot Yosef. That's incorrect. The reason it's incorrect is Ushpizin is Alpi Kabbalah. Ushpizin is not Eito. According to Kabbalah, right, it's like, you know, you're mixing two things. You're mixing chronology with something that's Kabbalistic. And Alpi Kabbalah, the 7 days of Sukkot are connected to 7 spheres. So therefore, Yosef is day number 6, not day number 4. Now let me just mention the last sphere. Now the last sphere, so it turns out like this. It turns out that you have the primary 3, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes. There's a reprise of Netzach, Hod, Yesod, right? So it's like 2 triangles, right? Imagine Chesed, Gevurah are opposite ends. They meet in a triangle tip. Tiferes, then you have a triangle of Netzach, Hod, Yisod, and Netzach gets its yanika, gets its nourishment both from Chesed and Gevurah, and Hod also gets its nourishment that way, and Yisod is a synthesis. We then have the final sphere, which is Malchus. And Malchus, the Zohar says, is an empty sphere. Malchus has no characteristic at all. It is simply the pipe, it is simply the conduits for all of the divine mixings of paints or waters or that's going. In other words, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides, this is second by second by second, how much Chesed, how much Gevurah, how much Netzach, how much Hod, how much Yesod, Malchus is the vehicle by which, in other words, everything we experience in the world is funneled, is the Malchus Hashem, is funneled through an expression of the Malchus Hashem. Malchus is the empty conduit that has no other characteristic than to be the vehicle to express Hashem's Malchus. And this is David HaMelech. Because David HaMelech perceived himself as nothing but a vehicle to reflect Hashem's will in the world. And that is why David HaMelech had nothing. David HaMelech did not even have his own life. Remember, David should not have been born or would have lived for 3 hours. Adam HaRishon, who should have lived for 1,000 years. By the way, how do we know that Adam should have lived for 1,000 years? It's interesting. Chazal say like this. Adam should have lived forever originally. But Hashem said, the day that you eat from the fruit, you will die. That means you'll be given one day to live. And it says in Tehillim that a day of Hashem is 1,000 years. So the Yom would have been 1,000 years. And yet Adam HaRishon only lived 930 years. Why did he lose 70 years? So the Medrash tells us, right, everyone knows the Medrash, that he gave 70 years of his life to the neshama of David HaMelech. And that's why the word Adam is said to be an acronym, an abbreviation. The Aleph is Adam, the Dalet is David, and the Mem is Mashiach. That is the same neshama. Now, the point is this. Why is it so important that David doesn't have his own life? Because if David is to be the person who experiences that I'm nothing at all, I'm only a conduit for the Giloy of Kavod Hashem, then, I mean, it's true for all of us. I mean, none of us really, everything we have is only from Hashem, but a person who didn't even have his own life, it was just given him from somebody else. Every second of his existence, he has that awareness. You see? So, therefore, these are the 7 Sfiras of, and they're connected, these 7 great Tzaddikim of Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. Yeah.
At the level of David HaMelech, the concept of conduit, he's not the receptacle of all that receiving.
Well, he's the receptacle, but he's also the conduit, meaning to say, his job is to carry out, to bring Hashem's Malchus into the world. And therefore, he is simply there to receive all that has come before him and transmit it. Now, here is the thing, and again, you may have heard a lot of this. If you take the 7 weeks of Sfira, each week corresponds to one of these divine Sfiras. So the first week of the Omer is the week of Chesed. And the second week of the Omer is the week of Gevura. And the third week is the week of Tiferes. What do we mean by this? That means that there's a spiritual force in the world that corresponds to these things. And not only that, but each day of each week corresponds to a sphere. So for example, in fact, it's even in the Art School Siddur, right? If you look at the first day of the Omer, which of course is the second night of Pesach, that is called Chesed Shebechesed, the day of loving kindness in the week of loving kindness. The second day is called Gevura Shebechesed, the Mida of Gevura within the week of Chesed. Now, because we're so spiritually impoverished, it's very hard to know, and I can't give you a convincing answer. What is the difference between the second day in the first week, that is called the Gevura within Chesed, and the first day of the second week, which is called the Chesed within Gevura? These are very hard to distinguish. But just to give you a biological analogy, which doesn't explain it, but it just illustrates it. You know, within every cell of the human body, there is the entire genetic structure of the whole organism. So if you take a skin cell, the DNA for heart, for liver, for brain, for kidney is all there, except it got shut off in the course of embryonic development. Right? In other words, when an egg, sperm fertilizes an egg, at first you just have this, these cells dividing. You don't have brain cells, kidney cells. At some point, the DNA for brain and kidney shuts off for that which becomes skin. And the DNA for skin shuts off for that which becomes kidney. But that DNA is still there. In fact, that's the theory of how cloning will work, where you can take a skin cell and somehow reactivate the DNA and get the whole person from it. Or you could take a piece of skin and get a heart out of it eventually, because it's all there. Well, so too in the spheros, in ways that we don't understand. Every sphera contains within it every other one. Within chesed, there are the 10 spheros, or at least the 7 spheros. Within gevurah, right? In other words, it becomes gevurah, but in it is all the other things as well. Every part is contained in the whole. Or rather, the whole is contained in every part. So, we go through this, and therefore, let's look at the date of Lag Ba'Omer now. Very, very significant. Lag Ba'Omer is the 33rd day of the Omer. The 33rd day of the Omer is the fifth week. Because 28 days, it's confusing because you still say it's 4 weeks and so days, but it's the fifth week. So Lag Ba'Omer is the fifth week. That's the week of Hod, the week of Aaron. And the 33rd day is the fifth day. It is Hod Shebahod, the day of glory in the week of glory. A double dose of Aaron in the world. So why does that make it such a joyous day? Because of the following idea. The students of Rabbi Akiva died because they did not show proper kavod to each other. And as we've said a number of times, kavod is not a matter of politeness or etiquette, but it's looking at another person with a sense of their chashivas, a sense of their importance, a sense of their dignity. To look at them and see their chashivas. For whatever reason, according to their high madrega, the students of Rabbi Akiva, again, we have to assume according to their madrega, which Hashem expected so much of them, they did not look at each other and see that chashivas. But the midah of the person that went the opposite way was Aaron HaKohen, who was the lover of peace, the pursuer of peace, who always, remember what Aaron's midah was if two people were fighting? Aaron would go over to each person and say, "You were wronged." See, Aaron didn't go over to you and say, "Make up, you're wrong." Aaron went over to you and said, "You were wronged by the other person, and he wants to make up to you." That's so, right? Because Aaron knew that the way you're makara of a person is by giving them a sense of their chashivas. So, it turns out, when you have a double dose of Aaron, what is the spiritual vibes that are in the air? A sense of feeling kavod for each other. Now, if we say the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva were a physical manifestation of a spiritual ill. And on Lag Ba'Omer, the spiritual koach in the world gave a person an ability to rise above that illness, then the physical magefa stops as well. Meaning to say, every zman has its special hashpah. Pesach is freedom, Shavuos is matan Torah. What is the kayach of Lag Ba'Omer? To feel and be margish, a sense of kavod for the other. And that's why the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying, because that was a day in which, maybe, now, if they died, started dying the day after, then maybe, like is often the case in life, it was a very short-term disorderus that dissipates right away. Right? That unfortunately happens. But the hisorderus within them was the midah of Aaron and Aaron, Hod Shebahod, which eradicated the spiritual illness that was the cause for the death of the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. So it's no accident that the day the Talmidim stopped dying was Hod Shebahod, because they died because Lai Nahagu Kavayt Zelazah, and Lag Ba'Omer was when you can go beyond that midah. Also, it's very interesting. If you look in Pirkei Avos mentions in the sixth perek, there are mem ches derachim. There are 48 ways by which one acquires their connection to Torah. 48 ways. In fact, Rav Noach Weinberg, Neisha Torah, has a famous lecture series on the 48 ways. Everyone from Mishnah Torah kind of has to memorize all of that. Now, the Svarim say that the 48 ways correspond to the Omer period. Each day of Svira, you try to concentrate on a way. And the 49th day of Svira, which of course is Erev Shavuos, is when you chazer, and you try to chazer all 48 ways together. It's like the putting it together. Now, there's a whole question of how you count them, but at least one of the countings, if you count in Pirkei Avos, and you go to number 33, it says, Ohev es habrias. That's number 33. You love your fellow human being. It doesn't even say Jew. So it's very interesting that Lag Ba'omer Zaveda is to be Ohev es habrias. And that's exactly one of the phrases Chazal used about Aaron HaKohen. Ohev shalom, v'rodev shalom, a lover of peace, a pursuer of peace. Ohev es habrios. Right? He loved the brios, God's creations, umekarvan l'Torah, and through that love, he was able to draw them to Torah. Right? So that's one idea of the aspect of Sfira, that it's Hod Shavuot. Again, I know it's a day late. Of course, the emes is, it's not usher to try to have kavod for someone even after Lag Ba'Omer. But at least on Lag Ba'Omer, that's a special hashpa that is connected. And through this explanation, you can see in a deeper way the great spiritual significance of Lag Ba'Omer. But
also, yeah, it comes out always on the 18th of Iyar,
right?
And so that's why 18th is Chai, because it's we give each other's life when we give each other.
That's very good. That's right. Based on our calendar, of course, it didn't have to be that way because Nisan could sometimes have our calendar. Nisan always has 30 days, so every day of the Omer will always be on the same calendar date. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, of course, in a way, the whole Avelis of Sfira is after the Churban anyway, but the time of the Beis Hamikdash, the Rebbe Kiva student didn't die yet. But when we have a Beis Hamikdash, the dates will not correlate exactly, because Nisan could sometimes be 29 days, and then it would be a day later. One other thing, though, so Lag Ba'Omer was one holiday that we missed in this year, and I'm talking about it now, but I want to mention an earlier Yom Tov. Last Friday was another Yom Tov. And that was the Yom Tov of Pesach Sheni. And Pesach Sheni, the 14th of Iyar, right? That's the Yom Tov that if a person on the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, was Tamei, he was in contact with the dead, so he wasn't allowed to bring a Korban Pesach. Of course, if most of the Jews were Tamei, they could, but if an individual was Tamei, he could not. Or he was Derech Rechoka. He was far from Yerushalayim, which, by the way, doesn't have to be too far. Basically, if you were around 15 miles from Yerushalayim, Erev Pesach, you didn't even have, even if you could have taken a Neged bus or something, you didn't have to do it. It's very, very interesting. In other words, it's pretty amazing, and I still don't, to this day, I don't fully understand the halachas here. It seems to almost be that you have to make virtually no effort at all to bring the Korban Pesach. Meaning, if you lived, 15 miles from Yerushalayim, there was no chiyuv. Of course, you'd have to go in the second. You might as well go in. But there was no chiyuv to specifically come in on the 14th of Nisan. You would be entitled to treat it as a distance and go next month. Of course, why would next month be easier? Well, you could say you want to miss the crowds. It's not clear. But it's still very, very amazing how easy it would be to get this exemption called Derech Rechoka. But that's what the halacha seems to be. In fact, according to another opinion, which we don't paskin like, even if you're in Yerushalayim, if you're not in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, right, you're invited for God, you could say, I'll bring my korban next month, because you were not in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Okay, but however we define it, the Torah says if a person is far away, derech rechoka, or a person is tameh, he could bring Pesach Sheni the next month. So the Chiddush Yerim says there are two important lessons we learn from the Pesach Sheni. Lesson number one is how a person regards himself. Sometimes we look at ourselves and we say, I'm so tameh, I'm so impure, I'm so not deserving of being connected with Hashem. How can I possibly make that connection? Or I'm derech rechoka, I'm so far away. Is there any hope for me? Pesach Sheni teaches us the very important lesson that no matter how tamei we are, no matter how far we think we are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the gift of the second chance. Hashem always gives us a chance to come to Him and worship Him and become close to Him. That's one important chiddush of Pesach Sheni. But there's another chiddush of Pesach Sheni that's equally important. And that is, if you remember the scenario, Hashem gave us the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, and then there were these tamei people. And by the way, why were they tamei? Either they had carried out the bodies of Nadav and Aviyah who got killed in the Mishkan, or they were carrying Yosef's bones. They were doing a mitzvah. And they come to Moshe and they complain, why should we be cheated out of a chance to serve Hashem? Give us a chance! Now if you think about it, you see an interesting thing. I mean, they're pudger. I mean, if a harried person before Pesach would be given a certificate signed by the Ribono Shel Olam that says, you don't have to prepare for Pesach this year. You know, many of us might not complain. I mean, if Hashem said we didn't have to do it, I mean, I would never, chas v'shalom, not do it. But if Hashem said I don't have to do it, you know, maybe fine with me, you know. And yet, we find that the attitude is very much the opposite. They didn't want a way out. They didn't want an exemption. The desire to serve Hashem was so powerful that they begged and they pleaded, give us a chance, don't exclude us. Now here the Chiddush Yerim says an important point. What would have been if they wouldn't have asked? He learns there wouldn't have been a Pesach Sheni. Meaning, the whole mitzvah of Pesach Sheni came only because they begged for that chance. If they wouldn't have begged, there wouldn't have been. They would have been putcher. They were putcher. They would have been exempt, and that's the end of the story. So the Chiddush Yerim says, you see from here the following. God always gives you a second chance, but you got to want it enough to ask. You have to want it. Sometimes you imagine there's a wall between you and the Ribono Shel Olam. In truth, in that wall is a door. There is a door. But unless you really want to go through that wall, you're not going to see the door. And that's the way it is in Avodas Hashem. That when you have the desire, Hashem will give you openings. When you don't have the desire, you'll just see the wall. So the opportunity is always there, the Chiddush Yerim says. But Hashem does not make it visible until that's really what you want. Meaning if you're happy to be putter, if you're happy not to have that relationship, then Hashem will not show you necessarily that there are ways of having that relationship. Right? So that's another lesson of what Pesach Sheni teaches us. It is the gift of the second chance and the idea that the chance comes for those who ask, for those who want. And sometimes we don't want enough. You know, if we don't want enough, in other words, it's a vicious circle. We don't want enough, and then we say, well, there are too many obstacles. But the reason why there are so many obstacles is because we didn't want. If we wanted, we would see the obstacles vanish in many, many ways. So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. In fact, I once saw in a Sefer a beautiful idea. And we said before, Yamin, the right hand of Hashem is Chesed, and the left hand of Hashem, Taviyachal, is described as Gavura. Gavura is strength, concealment, withdrawal. Now, so the midah of gevura is keneged smol. So this sefer says the word smol, which is spelled shin or sin mem aleph lamed, is actually an abbreviation. Sha'al, ask, ma etein lach, what I can give you. Meaning to say, even when there's gevura, so Hashem is not giving us things openly. If we ask, if we desire, he will make himself available. So the difference between is, the yamin is what is given to us openly and obviously. The smol is that which is hidden, and that which is concealed. Okay, so even in the gevura, there is the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch. So this is, again, now, oh yes, what I wanted to say is that, you know, we were talking about Lag Ba'omer. I want to connect Pesach Sheni to Lag Ba'omer as well. So our first idea of Lag Ba'omer is it's the midah of Aaron Hod Shebahod. But there's a second lesson of Lag Ba'omer that's connected to Pesach Sheni. And that is, the second reason why Lag Ba'omer is a joyous day is that this was the day that Rav Shimon ben Yochai died. It's very interesting. The Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying, and Rav Shimon ben Yochai, who was one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, he dies on Lag Ba'omer, and that's why it becomes a great day of Simcha. So Chara, for carrots, we celebrate because they didn't die, and we also celebrate because he did die. Why should that be a happy occasion? So we are told because the day that Rav Shimon ben Yochai died, he revealed the great secrets of the Zohar. He wrote the Zohar to the world. Great light was revealed to the world. And that's why to this day, if you've been to Eretz Yisrael, if you've been to Meiron, I was had the privilege of being there last year. I don't know if I'd go every year, but it's something you have to see once in your life, where you have hundreds of thousands of people. Literally, in Meiron, the bus has to leave you off around 2 miles from the kever. And then, you know, people set up all sorts of stores and booths. You could buy refrigerators and videos and everything. It's like a commercial zone for 2 miles until the kever. Meiron is right the next hill from Tzfat. Meiron is normally a very, very small town. I mean, Tzfat has many more people than Meiron. Tzfat is not a big place, but Meiron, unlike Ba'omer, is just gigantic and enormous. And this is called Hilula de Rashbi, the joyous occasion of celebrating the Petira of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So although generally, in fact, that's when many people do up Sharon, that's when they give their kids a haircut in Meiron and throw it into bonfires and the like.
But hasn't he been teaching the Zohar his whole life, and it wasn't like that last day he revealed it?
Well, he was in isolation for many years. Remember that the secrets of the Zohar were revealed to him during his 12 years in the cave. He was only with his son, and he died shortly thereafter. So the truth is, two Talmidim, he did not reveal it till the very end. I don't know if it was the last day, but you know, that's when the revelation was completed, was on Lag, on the 33rd day of the Omer. Now, there's a very interesting machlokas in Maseches Brachos between Rabbi Yishmael and Rav Shimon ben Yochai regarding a verse that we say every day in the Parsha of Shema, or in V'hayom Shemoah. What does Hashem say? Actually, it says in this parsha as well, if you do the mitzvos, Hashem will give you rain. V'yasafta diganecha, and you will gather your grain. So Rabbi Yishmael says a very interesting teaching. Oh, you will gather your grain? From here we learn out, you're allowed to have a job. Parnassah's okay. You'll gather your grain. That seems to be reasonable. You're allowed to have a parnassah. It's a mitzvah to have a parnassah. Rav Shimon ben Yochai argues with that. He says, Parnassa? What do you mean, Parnassa? A person is going to plant when it's time to plant, and harvest when it's time to harvest, and plow when it's time to plow? When is he going to serve Hashem? When is he going to learn? And we would say today, you work in an office from whatever it is, 8 to 5 or 9 to 6. What type of life is that? And he actually says, you know, this pasuk, V'yasafta diganecha, is not a blessing, but it's a curse. If Klal Yisrael would truly do the will of Hashem, their work would be done with derech neis. They wouldn't have to do this work. And the truth is, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is speaking a little bit autobiographically. Because, you know, for 12 years, he was hiding out in a cave because the Romans wanted to kill him. And for those 12 years, the ravens brought him meat. I don't know which hashkacha it was. It must have had a plumber, because otherwise you couldn't. I mean, it's true. You couldn't. If a bird were to bring me meat, I wouldn't be allowed to eat it. I don't know if it's kosher meat or not. But they brought him meat. There was a tree that had fruits and water. Hashem took care of him.
And what is his argument? It worked for me. It ought to work for you. The Gemara then goes on and says, many people followed the path of Rabbi Yishmael, combining a parnasa with learning, and they had hatzlacha. And many people followed the midah of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and they starved. They couldn't make a go of it. This obviously has some relevance on the issue of kolo, but again, not necessarily, because somebody would say, well, if I belong to a kolo that pays a weekly check, I'm following Rabbi Yishmael's view, right? In other words, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is talking about relying totally on miracles. Okay, so it's not necessarily conclusive on the issue. But the Vilna Gaon is medayik. What does the Gemara condemn? It says, harbe, many people followed Rav Shimon ben Yochai's view and they were not successful. Meaning it's wrong for the many, it's wrong for the average. The average person is mechuyev to have some type of parnasa. You can't rely on Hashem and say, I'll be at home all day, even if I'm learning, and the money will come to the door. But the Vilna Gaon says, in every generation, there are special individuals who are on such a high madrega that they are supposed to live like Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So what does this mean? The Chavos HaLevavos writes, you know, in the very famous chapter called Shar HaBitachon, which talks about trust, and he talks about the whole idea of how do you balance faith in Hashem with the obligation to make hishtadlus. Right? You can't say, I have faith in Hashem and the money will be at my door. Your faith in Hashem requires that you go out and look for sources of income. Not to be obsessed with it, but you have to make some ishtadlis. The Chavos HaLevavos says the following. How do you know how much ishtadlis to make? Now this is a very general statement. It doesn't really answer a specific thing. He says, the stronger your belief that every part of your life comes from Hashem, the less ishtadlis you have to have. In other words, for you to say, I'm going to test Hashem, meaning I don't really, that's not going to work. If you truly have that level, the more you believe Hashem is involved in your life, the more He will be involved in your life. The less you believe it, the less Hashem is involved. Rav Shimon ben Yochai represents such a level of emuna that indeed the chiyuv hishtadlus was diminished to zero. So it turns out that if it's true that on the yard side of a tzaddik, part of the tzaddik's hashpa is available for us to absorb, then a second aspect of Lag Ba'omer is Lag Ba'omer is a time when we could absorb on some level the emuna and bitachon of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So that's yet another aspect of Lag Ba'omer. Which can give us that type of hisayrus and connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And of course, that's why it's no accident that at least in many years, Lag Ba'omer falls out in the week that we read Parshas Behar, last week's Parsha, which is about Shemitah. And what is Shemitah about? Other than once every 7 years for us to abandon our fields so we recognize our parnasa comes from Hashem. Shemitah is the lesson in Emunah. Rav Shimon ben Yochai lived every day as a Shemitah. The Jew in Eretz Yisrael has to live once every 7 years with that particular Midah. And in this sense, let me just leave you with two very quick thoughts about Shemitah. You know, the Torah records that the Jewish people will ask Hashem, they will say, what will we eat in the seventh year when we're not allowed to plant? And Hashem says, I will give you a bracha in the sixth year that you'll have enough for the end of the sixth year to carry you over in the seventh year and even until the eighth year until you get a new crop. So there are two kashas the Mefarshim ask. Keep in mind, when is the harvest in Eretz Yisrael? The harvest in Eretz Yisrael is towards the end of the year. It's between Pesach and Shavuos. And the ingathering from the fields is not until Sukkos. So the truth of the matter is, any fear of starvation is not going to be during the seventh year, it's going to be during the eighth year. In other words, the seventh year you'll have plenty of food because you harvested it in the sixth year. So why does it say you will ask Hashem in the seventh year, what is it that we're going to eat? So the Bali Musar say, here you see the nature of a person who lacks bitachon. Even when he has plenty of food, he's always worried about what's going to be next year. Instead of rejoicing in what he has, because there is no starvation in Shemitah, because you have all that six-year stuff. But he's always asking. He's always wondering. He's always nervous. And that's what the Chavis of Lava says. No matter how much he has, he's worried. So that's one nekuda. The other nekuda is that, what does the Chumash mean? If you ask the question, what will you eat? So Hashem says, I will give you more.
It's like they're getting rewarded for asking the question almost.
That's right. What would it have been if they wouldn't have asked the question? So the Sephorno says a beautiful thought. He says, you know, the real bracha is not when Hashem gives you more. The real bracha is when you can learn to be sameach b'chelko, happy with less. Meaning, the ultimate bracha in life is not Hashem gives you more. The ultimate bracha in life is you have a sense of happiness and fulfillment with what you have. Nebuch, the Torah says, if you're not on the Madrega, where you can appreciate what the Ribbono Shalom gives you, so Nebuch, as an afterthought, he'll give you more. But that's an inferior bracha. That's a bracha of the person who hasn't reached the level of being sameach b'chelke. You know, I saw a very cute cartoon about two elephants who were coming down the gangplank of the Teva, after the Mabul. And one elephant said to the other, what a lousy vacation, it didn't stop raining for 40 days. And what that shows you is that sometimes the way we deal with the frustrations of life is to have all sorts of complaints against the Ribbono Shel Olam without realizing the tremendous brachos that surround us over and over and over again. I mean, these elephants were saved. The world was destroyed. They were saved. They're alive only because of the chesed of Hashem. And they only think about the fact that it was raining. They really had a bad vacation, right? So it's an attitude too. The Sephorno writes that the ikar bracha in life is not riboy hakamos, it's not to have a lot of possessions, but to be sameach in what you have. And that's why the answer of manochal is the inferior bracha of giving you more, because we weren't on a madrega in which we would be happy with life. Yeah.
I might have missed something. You said there was a connection between Rosh Hashanah and
Pesach. No, I was just saying that the connection is this, that Pesach Sheni is the desire to have a relationship with Hashem, even if there appear to be barriers. And that's mechuvan to the notion of emunah and bitachon, in which you want Hashem to be involved in your life. So in that sense, there's a connection there. Okay, so I wish you all well, and for those of you who are graduating, much, much hatzlach in the future, and Mitzvah Hashem, you should all be zochah to be a source of nachas to your families and to Klal Yisrael, and I guess... I guess you have graduation this Sunday, so I hope that everything goes well. Okay. I'm supposed to be there too, but okay. All right, so take care.